Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to Get The Table, another Wrestling Roundtable discussion podcast with myself, Adam Wilborn, and Andy Murray from What Culture, here to discuss another burning wrestling issue. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week, complete with a Beleaguer quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Andy Murray. And sir, we are gathered here. Oh, no. We are socially distanced here today to talk about why WrestleMania 37 was an absolute blast. And not treading on Simon Miller's toes too much, but it was great, wasn't it, Andy? What was your opinion of the whole weekend? And what was your favourite match?
Yeah, it was very, 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 very good couple of shows, wasn't it? No wrestling show is ever going to be perfect, but I think this was close to as perfect as it possibly could have been. And I think it was always going to be a fun set of shows because it would have taken a grand disaster for us not to be fired up about the return of crowds, right? And knowing that everyone was going to be working hard because they haven't been in front of an audience in a year. And it would have been taking an almighty disaster for this couple of shows to have really failed. But a lot of stuff on it exceeded my expectations as well. So I had a great time across Saturday and Sunday, and I'm looking forward to the next attended show as well. As far as favorite match goes, I thought the night two main event was great. I thought Seth Rollins versus Cesaro was great. But my favorite thing from either show, and you know, it's probably a lot of people's answer, was Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, who had an absolutely tremendous match. One of, you know, the best women's matches of this era of WWE's women's wrestling, and therefore by default one of the best women's matches in WWE history. It was my favorite main roster match of the year so far. They did an incredible job, not just of kind of playing up the drama and the moment and the significance of Bianca Belair's title win, and also, you know, two African-American women headlining WrestleMania. All of that was accounted for, but at the same time they told a really cool in-ring story with all the hair spots that eventually coming back to bite Sasha and costing her the match in the end after the whip. It was a sensational match, and the only slight tinge of regret is that it would have been cool if that was the last thing we saw from WrestleMania. But look, I'm not going to complain about the night two main event. That was really good as well. So it was happy times all around in the Murray household.
Yeah, like you say, it was a WrestleMania main event. There was two of them, of course. And certainly heading into it, I was like, well, they should have main evented, but they're not going to because of the awful build. I suppose, actually, this match was sort of a microcosm of the whole of WrestleMania in terms of the lead up to it, particularly on the Raw side of things, I would say. Absolutely dreadful. I know I'm getting hyperbolic on some of these podcasts, but I was sat there saying, is this the worst red brand build to WrestleMania ever? And then look at what they managed to do with Sasha and Bianca in particular. The video promo beforehand kind of spoke volumes, where they were like, remember when Bianca Belair won the Royal Rumble? And then these two faced each other at WrestleMania. Like, never mind all the tag team bollocks and Reginald. Let's just carry on with this. But like you say, it was just, it was a jaw-dropping main event. And overall as well, you've spoken about this, but I do want to give you real credit for this as well. I can't hammer home enough. A, WWE should now continue forever to do two night WrestleManias, even if that means if you're struggling to, I don't know why you would, you've got a year to build to it, but if you're struggling to sell one night, you say, oh, well, you buy a ticket and it allows you to attend both shows or whatever. Like, that's not difficult, rather than having to sell, what would it be, nearly 200,000 tickets or something bonkers. Right, that's fine. I'd happily, you know, we went to TakeOver on one night, and then we went to WrestleMania, and you didn't feel drained or burnt out by wrestling like that. But also, more importantly than that, the match lengths were key. There was one match across, what, 14 that went over 20 minutes, and even that only went 21 minutes and 40 seconds according to Wikipedia, and that was Night 2's main event. More of that sort of thing, as you said.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is a problem across every wrestling promotion in the world has this issue of bloat and this idea that long and epic automatically means great. And there are certainly dozens and dozens, maybe even hundreds of classic matches that are 25, 30, 40, 50, 60 minutes. But just because Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat did it, you know, 30 odd years ago, and you know, a more recent example like Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega did it, it doesn't mean that everyone has to do it. If you can tell your story, if you can tell the same story in 15 minutes that you could otherwise tell in 30, that's more skilled to me. That's more concise. That's more interesting. It means you're getting more bang for your buck. It means you're respecting your viewers' time. You're not filling up your match with silly bollocks like staring at your hands and wondering how violent you are. it's a trend I would really like to see all of wrestling come in. It's a particularly big issue in New Japan, but that's a whole different kettle of fish. Very stale fish in the case of the New Japan product. But it was so refreshing, because a 7-match card could easily have meant a 4.5-hour show under other circumstances. And in this case, it didn't. These shows were light, they were breezy, they were easy to watch. I did not feel that any of the match. I mean, you could maybe say like Big E and Apollo could have done with a longer runtime. Cool, yeah, absolutely. But they only went like 6 minutes. So everything felt cool to me. And I would hate to go back to the days of bloat and extreme length for the sake of extreme length.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like you say, if you wanted to add more time to Apollo and Big E, or like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, I could have given easily 5 more minutes, but maybe that's just my personal bias. Take it off the women's tag team match, because that's kind of crap. And maybe don't put on the tag team turmoil, because the winners of that didn't even win the tag titles. But we're here to talk about why WrestleMania was an absolute blast rather than focus on the negativity. I just to your point there, this is genuinely the first time I've realised that Cesaro and Seth Rollins went under 12 minutes. I would have guessed like 15. I was so invested in that match. And, you know, I feel it has got credit, but maybe not even the credit it deserves. Because, I mean, you and I spoke about this in the interim between the two nights. And I said to you, that match, and quite a lot of these matches, was sort of a regression to old school wrestling from WWE. And that's not a bad thing. It was just so simplistic. Like, this is a bad man. This is a good man. This good man wants to win, but also wants to do this other thing en route to doing that. And this bad man at every corner is going to try and cut corners and try and prevent him from doing it and just ruin your night, basically. I loved Cesaro, Seth Rollins.
Yeah, it was absolutely tremendous. And the runtime of like 11 odd minutes or whatever it was is kind of summarizes perfectly what I'm talking about. If that match went down under different circumstances, say it was on the main event of like some B-level New Japan pay-per-view, it would have gone 35 minutes or whatever. And there would have been a long drawn out opening sequence lasting 10 minutes where they did like exploratory exchanges of holds and limb work that didn't go anywhere and didn't factor into the finish before you got to the really good stuff. This got to the good stuff straight away. It didn't sacrifice any of the extra kind of in-ring storyline and psychology meat that you want, because Cesaro in particular, his selling throughout this whole thing was absolutely tremendous. It was only 11 and a half odd minutes. He's a really interesting guy to have followed for the past 10 years because he can do things in the ring that nobody else can. As he showed several times in this, the UFO spot in particular was mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. Because while Seth Rollins isn't the heaviest guy in the world, he's not the smallest either. Not by modern wrestling standards anyway. So And you saw when he won, when he finally won this big WrestleMania match, when he finally won a WrestleMania match that wasn't on the bloody kickoff show, Cesaro just looked elated. He looked like he'd won the World Cup. And that's what it's all about. That's what WrestleMania is all about. It's an oft-repeated phrase that Mania is about moments and memories and all of this. And sometimes that just seems like an excuse for lame booking. But here, as with a number of other things on the card, it felt real. And I hope that he does get the push coming out of this, because he's so much fun to watch. And yes, I know he can't cut 10-minute English language promos in the same way that Vince's ideal star might be able to. Come on, man. Just let the Swiss Superman do his thing. He's great.
Yeah. Him winning, you talk about this in your article about why WrestleMania was a blast, which is available at whatculture.com right now. But yeah, you talk about him winning the big one. And yeah, it wasn't the big, big one. But hopefully, it's the first step on him at least competing for the big one. Not suggesting that he needs to be a world champion. We've been down this road many times before. But why not? Why not have him challenge Roman Reigns on a B-level pay-per-view? What harm could it do him facing him at Money in the Bank? We all know he's probably not going to win, but we're also all not buying that pay-per-view just for Roman Reigns versus Cesaro. Although, despite my love of Money in the Bank, I genuinely think it's one of the best stipulations and one of my favourite pay-per-views of the year. If you tell me Roman Reigns versus Cesaro's on it, I'll probably just buy it for that, to be honest. Let's talk about the obvious, one of the obvious highlights for WrestleMania, the return of crowds. So good that, and almost added to by the fact that the first thing we really got was them going, oh, bollocks, let's go and find some shelter. It was just typical, wasn't it? We waited so long. We can wait a few more minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the What Culture, to peel back the curtain a little bit, as you can attest, the What Culture WhatsApp group chat was on fire when this storm warning and people were evacuating was going about. It was a crazy situation as we were getting ready to jump on a live stream and try and cover this show. And then it finally starts and, you know, it's Michael Cole and Samoa Joe in their little ponchos going, hey, guys, it's not starting, by the way. wait half an hour. But yeah, I mean, the crowds were worth the wait. Absolutely. The Thunderdome was a great idea, and it still looks cool on TV. It was a huge upgrade from the Performance Center. Those dingy Performance Center shows did the product no favors whatsoever. So the Thunderdome was welcome, but I tell you what, going back to it on last night's episode of Raw was really tough having an organic crowd there for two nights in a row. And yeah, you know, the stadium was only a third full, so it wasn't as boomingly loud as it could have been and all these other things. And maybe they were piping a little bit of noise and stuff in here and there. You got that impression. But it was just so refreshing, again, to hear this organic reaction to things, to hear a crowd swell naturally with a match and not just some guy sitting there going, yeah, play the pop button, chief. And, you know, we got real hoots, like crowd rejecting stuff. I didn't know how much I'd missed crowds rejecting and just crapping on things until Hulk Hogan got his racist ass booed out of the building.
Another thing I can compare that to is, you know, when they like went, Asuka and Kairi Sane are a team now. And instead of like making a new theme, they just play 10 seconds of one theme and then fade that out and play another one. Anytime Titus spoke, and by the way, I'm just going to use this moment, and I know Andy Murray agrees with this one, Titus, well played, sir. What a phenomenal host of WrestleMania, whether he's in a pirate outfit or not. But yeah, keep him in a pirate outfit. He looked bloody good in it. But Titus talking, thunderous cheers. The moment Hulk says, well, let me tell you something, brother. Deafening booze.
That was awesome. It was really funny, especially on night two when it was a little bit louder and you could see the look on Hulk Hogan's face like, oh, no, help, save me from this. And they did it later on as well on night two when WWE for some reason thought people were going to cheer the Bella Twins beating up Bayley. It was, you know, you don't want this every week, right? You don't want the crowd going rogue on every single little thing. But it's up to you to read that crowd. And if you read it successfully, you will avoid such things. And for these two nights, it was so much fun. I cannot wait for the next pay-per-view where we have people there. Because let me tell you, man, pop.lav is not paying the bills for me anymore.
Yeah, look, even just looking at like the Wikipedia page for, because I was like, wait, are they actually calling it that? Oh, yep, they are calling it WrestleMania Backlash. And the early suggestion of attendance zero, you know, competed in the Thunderdome, I was like, oh no, don't tell me that. I'm hoping maybe they do some sort of convoluted way of doing it in a smaller, I don't know. But maybe by Money in the Bank. I mean, they're flying around with the vaccinations in the States, aren't they?
Yeah, they're crushing it at the moment. I thought we were killing it. And then the USA was just like, hey, pal, just going to lap you here. So, yeah, maybe the return of crowds is going to happen a little bit sooner than we would have thought. You know, the UFC are hosting that fully attended indoor show in Jacksonville, which is loco to me. But yeah, obviously the thing you hope for mostly is health and safety and everything else. But as a viewer, it's hard not to want it as soon as possible, right? Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, anyway, we are here to talk about why WrestleMania was a blast. And one person who made it a blast and probably had a blast themselves is one Bad Bunny, entering the annals alongside the likes of, when we talked about this before, but Ronda Rousey, Pat McAfee. Bad Bunny. Not just on the night, I'd say from January, from his appearance in the Royal Rumble, he hasn't, for me, put a foot wrong.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's been really great. There's always, when a celebrity comes in, there's always this kind of too cool for school cynicism about them in wrestling. And I really don't understand why, because this has been going on for decades. You go all the way back to like Cyndi Lauper ushering in the rock and wrestling era, and things like Andy Kaufman working with Jerry Lawler. This is just a new version of that. And I get that, you know, some people are like, I don't like his music, so I don't want him here. It's like, okay, fair. You're entitled to not like his. I don't like his music either. But the guy's extremely popular. He sold $500,000 worth of merch in a week. And you know what? The most important thing of all is that by all accounts, the locker room were delighted with the guy, because he likes wrestling, he respects wrestling, he came in and did it the right way, he worked really hard, he was training at the Performance Center with Drew Gulak and Adam Pearce, and he was really good on screen. He did the physical spot at the Royal Rumble, and a lot of us probably thought, hey, well, that's it, bye-bye, Bunny, but that was cool, see you later, mate. But no, then he came back, he threw worked punches on TV, he got beaten up by Miz and Morrison, who splashed his car with what looked like face paint, finger paint.
And then he didn't throw him against it. They went, we'll throw you into the Nissan that's right next to it.
Yeah, we don't want to deal any lasting damage. And then he had this match, and he was far and above my expectations. You kind of grade celebrity matches on a curve. You're not sitting there going, oh man, that you know, that suplex really could have been crisper. That headlock's not quite snug enough. You don't sit there and do that, because that's nerdy and boring. You just kind of let yourself get washed up in the moment. And let me tell you, when a rapper does a goddamn Canadian destroyer on the floor on a pay-per-view, I'm popping all the way to the bank. I thought he did excellent. His ring entrance ruled. It was weird with the truck and stuff, but it ruled. It was awesome. And he entered a crazy performance. He was in the ring for like 75% of the match. we carried a match that had Damian Priest in it. Who the hell thought we'd be saying that? And not to discredit Priest or anything.
No.
Yeah, Bad Bunny was awesome. I loved his run. Honestly, I did. And you know, with Pat McAfee, with Shaq in AEW, and now with Bad Bunny, celebrities are on a hell of a run in pro wrestling. Yeah. Maybe we should do this more often.
Yeah, like you say, there's a few things I want to mention. First and foremost, as you alluded to, Bad Bunny completely ripping up the script or a WrestleMania celebrity match by going, I'll start it out. I'll take the majority of the offense, actually. Damien, you get the occasional hot tag. But I'll work this match, don't worry. Credit to Morrison as well for that Canadian destroyer. I think he deserves an element of congratulations for that, because I sense I could probably Canadian destroy Don Morrison because he's that bloody talented. And I hope as a result of that, and maybe they even alluded to a potential breakup of Miz and Morrison down the line, I hope he gets the push he deserves off the back of it, because I just think he's so talented and he's entertaining. Him saying Miz, Mrs. and Morrison and then going, we could call it tickled me for some reason on Raw. But yeah, like, it's just bonkers what Bad Bunny was able to achieve. And I think a lot of the time, and Pat McAfee wasn't guilty of this either, but a lot of the time when you see non-wrestlers in matches, they maybe even can do some of the physical stuff. But when you look at them, when the camera occasionally just cuts to their face, they're so busy thinking either A, well, this is going well, that they're kind of enjoying it too much, or B, oh, bollocks, what comes next? That you can see them sort of nervously glancing around or trying to work it out. And Bad Bunny exemplified, as you say, a celebrity wrestler performance, because he was just so in the moment. He was like blowing out of his arse at points where he clearly should have been. He shouldn't be able to take to this like a bloody duck to water. He's a rapper. He's not a wrestler. And yeah, he popped and the crowd popped. He was exemplary, because at the end of the day, like you say, for all the people who are like, oh, I don't like his music, or he's too cool or whatever, I looked at him from the moment I saw him at WrestleMania or found out more about him and went, you're just like the rest of us, aren't you? You're a massive bloody wrestling nerd, and you're reacting the same way that Andy and I would react if we got given these sorts of opportunities. But like you say, he did and he didn't get carried away in the moment, if that makes sense, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. He was... You know, the thing about Bad Bunny is that, like you've said, he's a musician and Pat McAfee is an NFL player. He's an athlete. And so while I think Pat McAfee is the celebrity goat as far as performances go, I think what Bad Bunny did was quietly more impressive, because he doesn't have that background. And like you said, there were times when he was blown out of his arse in this match, but he kept on going. He kept on going and he didn't make silly, you know, sloppy errors. And there was no points where you looked at him and went, oh, he's thinking too much about what he's doing or all of this stuff. I'm reticent to use the word natural, because Ronda Rousey is probably the golden standard as far as naturally adapting goes. But again, athletic background. But it was very, very composed while also clearly loving life. He was tremendous. I thought it was great.
And we should also give a nod as well to The Miz, because I thought his selling, but more importantly, that bit where, I can't remember what the move was that got him out of the ring, but he went to do, maybe it was I can't remember. I'm trying to think if it was the Hurricanrana spot or not, but the bit where Miz found himself outside the ring and had that look on his face of like, wait a second, I was just about to manhandle Bad Bunny. How am I out here now? Just proves what a occasionally very underrated talent Miz can be in the right sort of spot. We had a lot of concerns going into WrestleMania for the Bad Bunny match because of, you know, we didn't know what to expect. Just like Big George! Oh, the title from the list that Andy wrote about this, the title is just Almost Rules, because he did, didn't he?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was so much fun. The modern wrestling big man, obviously, is a multi-tool player. It's Keith Lee or a Lance Archer. They're very light-footed. They can do things in the ring that you would normally associate with cruiserweights. And it's very athletically impressive. And I would say that those two in particular are among the most impressive wrestlers in the world for what they can do in spite of their size. But there's a certain joy to be derived in watching just an old-school clobbering giant plodding around the ring. These little guys, little smaller opponents, just bouncing off of him, throwing them all over the place, crashing into them with the elegance of a bull in a china shop. It's awesome. It's AE style. It's classic. And no one really does that style anymore, not at a mainstream level. It's all about being hyper-athletic and everything else and having a broader range of skills. But there's an art to being a limited guy who knows he's a limited guy, knows what he can do, knows what he can't do, and just focuses on the good stuff. And that's what the big man did. He was ridiculous. He wasn't in there trying to do, you know, kip ups and stuff. He was just smashing into folk and finishing Kofi off with that Baldo bomb variant and just planting his foot on his chest. It was so much fun. I got a real kick of it. It brought me back to the days of old wrestling when things were less advanced athletically. And it was a hoot. He's great. I love the guy. When he came out, I was like, is this guy wearing a shirt and trousers to wrestling? What's going on here? Is he dressed for his day job? Whatever that may be. But he was sick. I've loved him since day one, I think. And then when he started throwing people around on Raw a few weeks ago, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And it does help that he's in there with AJ Styles, obviously one of the best ever. But yeah, just what a pleasant joy this was. I'm looking forward to more matches where he stands on the apron for 8 minutes, comes in for one, and never sells anything, because it's a hoot. It's a hoot.
It's like when they had the Viking Raiders return on Raw last night, and they were like, we're the big, horrible bastards who just kick the crap out of people in tag team matches. And I was like, sorry, lads, that position's taken by one man, one half of a tag team. Very quickly, it'd be rude of us not to mention the WWE Championship match between Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre. Some people not happy about the result, but the way they got there, I thought was really, really good. And maybe sort of, it hasn't been mentioned enough because of the decision for Bobby Lashley to retain, perhaps.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame in that regard because a lot of people were really pining for Drew to win. And really, it did seem like a bit of an open goal to have in your first match back, big cathartic celebratory babyface win. But I wasn't mad at the result. I don't get mad at WWE results in general. But the flip side of this coin is that as bad as it may have been for Drew in that situation, it made Lashley look like a monster, forcing him to pass out in the Hurt Lock. And I thought it was a good match as well. I really got into it. I thought Drew's ring entrance, he was all fired up. As soon as he was in the ring and just screaming, like, with a face I've never seen from Drew McIntyre in my life, I was like, this guy's fired up. This is going to be sick. And they had like a match that was like one half hoss fight, one half just big bombs. All kinds of fun moments in there, like Drew getting his todger caught on the top rope and he dived out. It was very, very painful, I'm sure. Poor fella. It was a good way to open. For sure, it was a good way to open. And I'm glad they went with this configuration, with this opening and Bianca versus Sasha headlining rather than the other way around. I think it worked perfectly. And sure, you might, maybe you think the ending's a bit of a bummer. That's up to you. I'm not going to disagree with you. But I had a really good time. I was sports entertained. And it's nice for Bobby to have a slightly longer run because he waited a long time for this as well. So I can't be mad at it, put it that way.
And sort of a reverse of that was Ripley and Asuka on night two, a match that suffered unquestionably because there just wasn't a story there. You had three weeks build to it. I don't know what you were playing at with Rhea Ripley, WWE. She had that Royal Rumble showing and they just went, right, we'll put you on ice for two and a bit months or whatever. Madness, in my opinion, that. But regardless, the match was slightly, not necessarily disappointing, but it without the story there, the technical side of things kind of got a bit lost. But most importantly, Rhea Ripley wins the big one and becomes Raw Women's Champion. That's one of your big takeaways from this.
Yeah. The match did suffer from like a lack of crowd investment and energy from the audience a little bit, but that's the fault of the build, which was lazy and kind of rushed. And I do appreciate that WWE's plans changed, but when your original plan was babyface Charlotte versus Lacey Evans, who's shagging her dad, maybe that shouldn't have been a plan in the first place.
Yes.
so I'm not willing to cut them that much slack for it. But Yeah, they worked hard. They're two of the absolute best. And Rhea winning was really essential, I think, because she had that really disappointing result against Charlotte last year, which kind of set her off in this kind of horrible downward spiral, really, like credibility-wise, and sucked the life out of her character. So it was vital that she won here. I do think the next step will be pinning Charlotte at some point. Next big step in her kind of star-making process. But it was definitely good to see her get the rebound here. 24 years old, she's got like decades potentially ahead of her, and she's already this good. She's already got this much presence. I learned the other day, and I'd never heard her height before. Rhea Ripley's only 5'7". That's up to your shoulder, basically.
I saw this on Twitter and went, I just thought someone was making some joke when they put the little bald fat man next to her when they were doing the bit backstage before Riddle forgot what he was meant to say to Asuka. And I thought, I didn't believe it. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because it's a testament to her presence and her confidence and what she exudes, because she seems like she's 10 feet tall on the screen. Like, if you'd asked me off the top of my head, I would have said, you know, 6'1", 6'2".
Yeah, same.
You know, like a towering presence. And she is a towering presence without actually having the physical height. She's awesome. And to have that at such a young age is super impressive, because it's a trait that really, and this is a cliche, but it's a trait that can't be taught. Asuka probably needs a bit of a rebuild after the past few months. I think that's fair to say. Hopefully she gets that. But yeah, this was a vital moment for Rhea's career. Don't know why she vanished from TV either, but she's here now. She's the focal point of the division. She's got Asuka over here. She's got Charlotte over here. Maybe some people coming up. Maybe we'll get a few call-ups. Who knows? But it's looking good for her. And I'm glad it's looking good for her now, because a year ago, it was pretty grim.
Mm. Before we get to the main event of night two... blow away that was a quick mention for Sheamus versus Riddle, which was on the way up until that main event to be match of the night on night two for me. I thought these two work wonders together. I would unquestionably have them run it back at WrestleMania Backlash, maybe stip it up, but they beat the crap out of each other, Andy, and quite possibly one of my favorite finishes across the entire weekend, that match.
Yeah, it was very cathartic. I have to admit, I find it very difficult to subjectively invest and enjoy Matt Riddle matches because of the things he has been accused of away from the ring. I have that mental block and I don't want to invest in them. But the finish was extremely well worked, objectively. It was one of those things that, and often when a move like that comes out of nowhere, sometimes you'll see someone just jump off the top rope and they're not really doing anything. They're literally just jumping into a move. But this felt organic. It felt like Riddle was really trying to hit that moonsault thing. And Sheamus went, nah, mate, just kicked him out of the sky. Really good stuff. And Sheamus deserves this, because I don't think there's been a single more consistent person in the ring in 2021 on main roster WWE than Sheamus. The Drew McIntyre match is ruled. Really great Bobby Lashley match on TV as well. And this was of a high standard too. He's like at a very advanced stage potentially in his career, given his spinal problems and everything else. And he's over 40. And yet he's crushing it every week. He's beating the crap out of people and they're beating the crap out of him. And it is a joy to watch. I hope he gets a long run. And I hope his run involves lots of matches where they just smack the piss out of each other. And he's really good at it.
Right, let's conclude then, Andy, by talking about that main event on night two. I went into it saying, oh, I don't know who's going to win this. And 20 minutes into it, I sat there going, I still don't know who's going to win this. For all the criticism that has been leveled at the way WWE have been booking Edge, it didn't matter, did it? These three worked absolute magic together in the ring.
Yeah, this was so cathartic on a number of different levels, because like you said with Edge, like there's been a lot of criticism thrown at the character, and objectively as well, he had that week where after the Royal Rumble win, he literally tanked three shows ratings. Like Raw, SmackDown and NXT had crap showings with Edge advertised and built up and hyped to be making an appearance. So it wasn't easy to feel good about Edge heading into this, but then he came out and he got one of the biggest pops of the night, and he entered a tremendous performance, easily for me his best performance since coming back to WWE. And I know it's a short list of matches, and that, you know, the greatest wrestling match ever was like filmed and edited and rehearsed and everything else. And he had the cinematic match at WrestleMania last year. So it's not a big sample size, but I thought he was excellent here. I thought he was really great. Daniel Bryan is a glue who can fix any problem. I think he's one of the best wrestlers in WWE history. I think he is still a best in the world contender, even though he's not out there, you know, having like 700 star matches every week or whatever, whatever. What can you really say about that guy? He was excellent again here as well. And Roman Reigns as well. You know, he came out and he got kind of a mixed reaction, right? Because boos, obviously, because he's a heel and he's a very good heel. But cheers as well, because he's awesome. Who doesn't like this Roman Reigns run? It's in modern wrestling, it's very difficult to get like a pure reaction for a heel, because a lot of people will be like, hey, he's doing a really good job. I like that. But during the course of the match, like, he was able to turn the audience against him. Like, you got the impression that the people who did cheer him when he came out were going, boo, you suck, heel man. And that speaks to the strength of his work. It was really nice to see him get booed where he was supposed to get booed at WrestleMania, because so often he's been this babyface guy that nobody really connected with. So it was a triumph on multiple levels. It was extremely well laid out and paced, and all the spots came off well and everything else. And I like the finish as well, just stack them up, pin them both at the same time. I'm the head of the table, I'm the chief, you guys can go away, back of the line. I like that level of dominance. And also, just to add one last point as well, I actually like the use of Jey Uso as well. It you know, there's no rules really in a triple threat, there's no DQs. Why wouldn't he just get involved straight away? Why would you wait till the end like a lot of matches do? In this match, Jey Uso was like, no, I'm just going to start super kicking people because I can. And then he got taken out for a while and he came back in. Great match. Probably my favorite of this Roman run so far.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to see what he does. I can't wait to see what all three do next, because this was great for all of them.
Yeah, in spite of dreadful Raw after Mania, I have to admit, this week, and in spite of the fact that it's been a hell of a fortnight, and this is not us complaining, we are blessed to do the job that we do, and thank you for all your support to allow us to do that. In spite of that, in spite of how draining these couple of weeks are, whether you're a fan or someone who, you know, reports on it like us, I think I'm going to stay up on Friday night, because I have to see not only what happens with Bianca and Sasha and Bryan and Edge and Roman. It just all overall on that blue brand, and Owens and Zayn, we haven't even had time to really talk about. Like, it's so good. And that sort of leads to my final question, Andy. Let's try and pretend Raw hasn't happened or didn't look like that. But will WWE learn anything from this WrestleMania, do you think?
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, history kind of tells us that they are set in their ways, and that events like this that are roaring successes, they're not always followed up on. And that's not necessarily us being like grumpy old farts or whatever. It's just looking at the evidence of the past 10, 20 years even, and going, you know, you take these sweet victories like WrestleMania was, and you hold them close and cherish them, and you await the next one, because it's not always going to be great like this. They have an absurd amount of content they produce, and a lot of it doesn't deliver, particularly on Monday nights. I think, you know, Raw has not been a particularly consistent show for a long time. SmackDown has, so that's good. I think that it feels like SmackDown is produced by a completely different company, even when it's the exact same person, Bruce Pritchard, at the top of the pile, and ultimately Vince as well. So it's a weird anomaly you have. It's a weird situation you have in WWE in that regard. But I think SmackDown will continue being good. I think Raw will continue being... that's my polite reaction to the average episode of Raw, unfortunately. But I will say this, you know, while I don't think they'll learn anything and apply it to their TV, other than, oh my God, let's get fans back. I do think that generally over the past few years, WWE have not always been a great TV company, but they have been a very good pay-per-view company. And that I think there are plenty of reasons to be enthusiastic about shows like WrestleMania Backlash and whatever comes next, Wrestle Money in the Bank, whatever we're going to call that. You'd love the day for WWE to go, oh, that's a problem, let's solve it so no one ever complains about it again. But it's Vince books Vince's way, and there's not much to suggest that's going to change while he's at the helm. So it is what it is. The company is very successful monetarily wise, financially wise. They have little reason to change anything. So I'm going to be same old, man. I'd love to be able to sit here and go, yes, everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be amazing and wonderful. But that would be foolish of me. So, no, I think we're going to be as is. But as is isn't necessarily terrible. If you just keep the bad stuff at arm's length and laugh at the fiend, always laugh at the fiend.
And, yeah, I the eternal optimist to me hopes that they will take what happened over the weekend and learn from it and build that into Raw. And maybe Raw was just bad because it was too soon after Mania or things like that. And maybe they'll look into when they have a few days to reflect into like the success and the reaction to those unscripted promos when they had 40 minutes to kill because of the rain on night one. On the other side of things, though, I still remember what happened in the aftermath of WrestleMania 35, one of the best WrestleManias in recent memory too. So we shall wait and see, but let us know why you thought WrestleMania 37 was an absolute blast on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Andy Murray at...
Follow me at Andy H. Murray. The H stands for Hamlet.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. But for now, my thanks to Andy Murray. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.